Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Animales. Freedom of Species is a radio program dedicated to raising awareness about issues concerning animals. It's broadcast from the 3CR studios in Melbourne, Australia, and streamed live via the 3CR website. Recent podcasts are available from both the 3CR and Freedom of Species websites. All podcasts are available via iTunes. Welcome to Freedom of Species. My name's Kate Gracie. I recently had a chat with Damien Cole on the phone. Damien's an independent candidate in the upcoming federal elections in the seat of Corangamite. That's down around the Surf Coast area of Victoria. He's also an ambassador for Surfrider Foundation Australia for the Fight for the Bite campaign. Damien, thanks for finding time to talk with me today. Can you first just start by telling us about the Great Australian Bite? Like, what is it, what's there, and why is it so significant?
Yeah, listen, thanks for having me on, Kate. So I guess the Great Australian Bite is such an amazing place and part of our world. It's probably one of the last pristine marine areas and ecosystems in the world. And it's also one of the highest. It's got a really huge amount of diversity. And it's also a breeding ground for whales. It's 85% of the animals found in that area are endemic to that area, which means they're only found in the Great Australian Bite. And not only that, I've driven across the Nullarbor a couple of times now, and driving past it, you get that sense of just how incredible this part of the world is, just with these huge cliffs. It's got the longest continuous cliff in the world, which goes for hundreds of kilometres. And when you stand on the edge of those cliffs, you just get the raw feeling of that Southern Ocean, which also has the highest energy. It's the highest energy ocean in the world. So when you couple all that together, it just makes for just a unique ecosystem and just one of the last pristine areas in the world.
Can you give us a sense of what animals call the bite home?
There's so many different animals down there. So obviously it's a breeding ground for whales. You've got all your seals. So there's huge colonies of seals. There's all different types of sharks. But then you go into the smaller stuff where you've got it's a huge cray fishing area. There's a lot of different mollusks. So a lot of invertebrates. So there's a lot of kind of incredible animals, and then what's happened as well between 2013 and 2017, there was a program that went down there to study a lot of the marine life down there, because before then actually a lot of the marine life, nothing had really been studied down there. So between 2013 and 2014. There was 275 new species found to science, and another further 800 or so which had never been found in that area before. So it kind of begs to the question of, like, what other animals down there that we don't know about? So there's a lot of unknowns as well, because it is such an isolated area. But for me, that just gives it that more of a majestic appeal.
Yeah, it sounds, what you described sounds incredible.
Yeah.
So what is the proposal for the bite, and can you fill us in a bit about the industrial activity that the proposal would involve?
Yeah, so the Labor government back in 2011 actually released a lot of areas, some leases to do some exploratory drilling, including one smack bang in the middle of a national marine park that's down there. And we've had both BP and Chevron who put in their environmental plans over the last few years, and they got knocked back a few times because their environmental mitigation strategies weren't adequate enough. And we now have Equinor, which is a Norwegian company. They're actually owned, they're 67% owned by the Norwegian government. And they've come in and they want to drill in the middle of this National Marine Park, which is hundreds of kilometres off the coast of South Australia. So it's a very remote area. So that's what for us gets, it really starts sounding alarm bells when you look at, I go back to being the highest energy ocean in the world. They're going quite deep. They're going over 2 kilometres deep below the surface of the ocean. So you couple those things together and you start to go, well, hang on, well, what are the dangers here and what are the risks? And the risks are that if there is potential for an oil spill, it could go as far as Port Macquarie up in New South Wales, and it could envelop the whole of Tasmania. It could go back towards Western Australia. So it has the potential of decimating the coastline of 5 different states, which is why we're fighting so hard for it.
Wow, I had no idea of that geographic range. That's crazy. So what about the geographic range of the seismic testing that I believe is also involved?
Yeah, so the seismic testing is in itself, that was at worst case scenario that I say the oil.
Okay, yep.
Is, if we look at something similar, which we might get into a little bit later, but something similar to the Deepwater Horizon, which happened in the Gulf of Mexico about 9 years ago. So if we look at something similar to that, then that would be huge. But what we're also looking at is you also have to look at seismic testing, which is done before any drilling is done, which is a huge boom of sound that echoes. It's a sonar, essentially, where they're looking for oil and gas in that way. And what that does, it releases a sound every about 10 to 12 seconds. And that's been known that there's extensive reports coming out saying that it's affecting breeding of crayfish. It's killing the phytoplankton. As scientists, we kind of can't, we don't like to make any kind of assumptions, but there is correlations between whales beaching themselves and seismic testing because of the disruption in their sonar. So it's affecting every single level of the food chain within the ocean, and that for us is just, or for anyone really, it once you destroy one part of that, it could decimate the whole ecosystem in itself.
I heard you say that the seismic testing can go on, what, sort of 10-second intervals? How long would it go for? Are you talking for 10-second intervals over a period of minutes or hours? Or
days, weeks, months?
Wow.
Yeah, they go on and on. So, and I've heard, and this, again, this isn't a scientific analysis, but I've actually heard firsthand of fishermen over there saying that there's the tuna populations aren't going back up into the bite anymore because they have started out there and they're actually staying low towards Kangaroo Island. So there's just things like that where it's disrupting the normal kind of process and the normal kind of way of life down there. And once you affect one bit, it's a game of dominoes, really, and we don't know where it'll end.
And what about the range of this seismic testing? Does it have the same catastrophic range that a massive oil spill could have?
Not so much. I mean, it doesn't go for thousands of kilometres, but it definitely can affect animals, kilometres away, like tens of kilometres away.
Right.
So that's what it is. There's still a lot of unknown, which is also that for me is also very scary, is that we're going into an area that is pristine and relatively untouched, and we're gambling. We're gambling the future of our oceans and the future of our communities without knowing the proper impacts.
Now, you said the drilling proposal is smack bang in the middle of a marine park. Is that right?
Yes.
Which marine park?
The marine park, I'm not sure of the name, but it's 370 kilometres off Ceduna.
Right. Has the government just exempted any of the marine protection laws for this drilling proposal?
Well, this is where it gets quite interesting, is that I feel like they're not necessarily exempt, but they've had to fill out an environmental plan, which was released to the public in early March, end of February, and that was open to public discussion as to what we thought the problems might be. But when you read through the environmental plan, there's... When you look at it, when you look at the way that they've written things, of, you know, let's say we'll talk about an endangered seabird, and they'll say, yep, okay, well, we've acknowledged that it's there, and then they'll kind of put a pretty kind of average answer and just say, oh, we've mitigated the risk as much as possible, so we put it into the low category. So it's kind of a bit of a tick and flick kind of system, which for me is fundamentally flawed when we actually look at the impacts that could happen.
Has the Australian government been satisfied with that kind of response from Equinor?
No, at the moment, the jury's still out. So there was over 31,000 submissions that were put to the governing body, which is called NOPSEMA, and that's now being reviewed by Equinor, and they actually have to address every issue that they see in these submissions. But then it just goes back to NOPSEMA, and then if they are happy with the outcome, and then they'll grant the permit.
I read that Equinor's environmental plan, which I understand, by the way, is 1,500 pages long, and I can't imagine... I mean, have you read it, Damien? 1,500 pages?
I haven't read it all. I'll admit, I haven't read it all. I've been pretty busy with the campaign. With the federal campaign,
yep.
As well as this Fight for the Bite stuff. But there are some kind of broken down, there's kind of summarised as well. And I've had my team onto it as well, and I trust them with my life.
I read that this environmental plan that Equinor has put out does not make the grade. If it was a European proposal, it wouldn't cut it, but it's potentially cutting it for an Australian context. Can you illuminate me on why that is so?
This is my personal thought, and I think the thought of many people, is that this is where it goes back to. It's not necessarily Equinor who's at fault. It's, you look back at the way that our laws have been written. Yeah, and it's not just for this, but our laws that are written in for our environment in Australia, for me, are severely inadequate, and they've been written in order to develop and in order to make money, and they have been skewed towards a different way. So it goes back to, you know, we have some systematic flaws, I feel, in our government, which favours big companies over our environment. And that's one of the huge reasons as to why I'm actually running in this federal election is strictly that to go in there and start fighting for our communities and our environment rather than big business. And that, at the moment, it's just skewed the other way, and this is why we're in the mess that we're in right now, and we're in the middle of a climate crisis, which we can see every day, everywhere around the world.
Now, the proposal's in the middle of a marine park. How does that not afford the environment something pretty close to an ultimate protection? Because you'd think that an oil drilling proposal is possibly the worst case scenario that you could propose to a marine park. So I don't understand how a marine park could possibly, under any circumstances, accommodate an oil drilling proposal.
I couldn't agree with you more, Kay, and I'm still, every day I question this, and it just, Everything about this project or this proposed project doesn't make sense. None of it does. It doesn't make sense on a social aspect, on an environmental aspect, or economic. When you look at it with the potential for, yes, we have the potential of, let's say, creating 1,500 jobs for people on this project, but then we're putting at risk tens of thousands of jobs in the fishing industry, the tourism industry, things like that. When you look at it from an environmental point of view, that just doesn't make sense at all in any sense. Even if they are mitigating the risks as much as possible, any small, tiny fraction of a risk is too much. And then obviously, on a social aspect, is we're putting the risk of hundreds of communities and hundreds of thousands of people, as I say, across five different states, and for what? For a short-term gain, for some money for the federal government. But we're also putting at risk so much. So I can't actually answer that, to be honest, Kay. I have no idea how an oil company can go in the middle of a national marine park and drill for oil. It's absolute madness.
It makes the marine park not worthy of the paper it was written on.
Exactly right. And for me, the ironic thing is that you're not allowed to go fishing in that area, which is great as a national marine park. So if you can't go fishing as a recreational fisherman, how can you then go and drill. It's
insane.
It's baffling. And this is where it goes back to where our policies are just grotesquely inadequate.
Can you be specific about which animals are expected to be impacted by the proposal and how they would be impacted?
So if you go to, so it depends, if you're talking about an oil spill, then it would decimate so many different, like seabirds, all the different kind of invertebrates. Obviously, as I said, it's a breeding ground for southern right whales. Then we go into the actual, for the crayfish industry, as well as the oyster industry. So if you look at, say, oyster industry, what they are is their natural filters, ocean water filters. So obviously, once we start getting oil into it, it'd just decimate the whole oyster farming industry. And then, if we go, all you have to do is look back to the 2009 Deepwater Horizon spill, and everyone gets a clear image in their head of, you know, seals covered in oil and pelicans covered in oil, and it's just endless, really. It's going to affect absolutely any animals that are there. And then there's also operational leakage, even if there isn't an oil spill, which that happens on a daily basis all around the world in every, you know, pretty much every oil rig. So the whole situation here as well is that it's not necessarily just the oil spill. It's looking at things going, it's 2019, we're in the midst of a climate crisis, and there is negative impacts on so many aspects here. So whether it be an oil spill, whether it be, just even contributing to this climate crisis, whether it be the seismic testing, whether it be operational leakages, whether it be smothering, whether it be, you know, there's just everywhere you look on this potential project, it's madness.
Does oil drilling ever occur anywhere in the world without environmental damage? Is it possible?
It depends what you mean by environmental damage. For myself, as an environmental scientist, I'd say no. There is an impact to everything that we do as human beings. And to be doing things like this, and again, potentially with the oil spill or even without, we need to move forward to renewable energy. We have the capacity, we have the knowledge, we have the finances and the technology to go towards renewable energy, and instead we have this societal addiction to fossil fuels, and we're damaging not only our environment directly but indirectly as well, as we're seeing with this climate crisis. So it's no, I'd argue that absolutely not. Every single fossil fuel project that has ever been put forward or that has ever been around the world has actually had some kind of detrimental effect to our planet.
Do you find it somewhat hypocritical that there's concern from the commercial fishing industry about the impacts of noise pollution, for example, one impact, an impact on fish and the fish stocks, when it's those same fishermen that intend to subject those same fish to death by suffocation or whatever, or something similar? Is that somewhat problematic?
I think the world is full of, you know, hypocrisy on some level. Absolutely. It's the same as, you know, there's been arguments even targeted at myself and saying, well, you drive a car, you know, so you shouldn't be able to kind of protest this. But I guess I can't speak for the fishermen, so I'm not sure. I don't eat fish myself. But if for them, if it is a livelihood aspect for them, and if it can be done in a sustainable manner, then that in itself is that's a different kind of issue altogether. But I think it's just a matter of we've got a planet that's this big, incredible planet with a lot of resources, and we have to make sure that we are sustainable in every way that we do things. In saying that, we will have an impact on the world around us, no matter what we do. It's just that we have to try and mitigate that as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think fishing is widely regarded by many people now as simply unsustainable because our fish stocks worldwide have become so low and so unviable commercially that any kind of fishing is simply unsustainable.
I mean, that's my personal opinion. I agree with you. That's why I'm vegetarian. That's why I don't eat fish, because I know that the fish stocks have just plummeted over the last kind of couple of decades. But it's also, if we can all make our own contribution, our small contribution, positive contribution to this planet, then we can. But in saying that, I personally can't go and tell someone to stop eating fish. That's why we live in that society. So. But in saying that, I think we are moving towards a more sustainable way of life through education and awareness, and I think we're starting to see that with all the problems that we're seeing around the world, is that people are needing to change and needing to change their ways. So that's the other side.
You've been listening to Damien Cole talk about the Fight for the Bight campaign to save the Great Australian Bight from oil drilling. Let's have a break with a song that's been selected by Damien. It's called Brother and it's by Jack the Fox. And then we'll come back and hear some more from Damien.
Sail for human rights, Indigenous sovereignty and climate justice. Our destination is Manus Island. Join us for the Freedom Flotilla. Sailforjustice.org. Get on board.
A 3CR supporter. Denied their request in jail, all because they dread their living
hell. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio on 855 AM and this is the Freedom of Species show. Now, that last song was a song recommended by our guest, Damien Cole. That song was called Brother, and it's by an Australian indie band called Jack the Fox. Now, we've been talking to Damien about the Fight for the Bight campaign, and let's return to that chat with Damien. I read recently about a US congressman, a Democrat, who blasted an air horn in some kind of official hearing recently to demonstrate how loud it is. And then he added, imagine that sound several times per minute for many months and 1,600 times louder.
I think it was 16,000.
Oh, 16,000 times. Maybe it was. Maybe it was 16,000 times louder. Anyway, bloody loud, which I thought was a very nice illustration of just how ridiculously loud seismic testing is. Have you tried that approach? Because that sounds awesome.
No, I haven't tried that approach yet. our whole campaign is we do like to do things a little bit differently as well. So as soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, I like this guy. but yeah, definitely, it gets the point across, and that's what we have to do. We have to put things into perspective for people, and that is exactly that, is to show people firsthand. This is what's happening under the surface. So I'm all for that. I think that was a stroke of genius by him. But we've been kind of doing different things. We were protesting last year, and we had Richard Di Natale come down to Bell's Beach, and we all dressed up in the kind of Hazchem suits with masks on, and we kind of did a bit of a photo shoot around Bell's Beach, and then I went surfing in the suit with the mask and kind of said, like, is this what we're going to have to be surfing in if there is an oil spill, you know, if we do get to surf? So it's good to kind of have, because it's the point of difference, and it makes people realise that, you know, pardon the pun, but this is not a drill. You know, this is actually going to happen.
Yeah.
So,
now that's a good segue to these next questions, and it's about the campaign. I want you to tell me about the campaign that you're involved with Surf Rider Foundation Australia. And you know, you've been getting some great turnouts to the rallies. It seems like you're doing something different and you're doing something really right because of the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly, as soon as the environmental plan dropped about 6 weeks ago, that's straight away we as surfers went, all right, we need to protest this. And what's the best way to protest the surfers is we do what we call paddle outs. And a paddle out is usually done as part of a funeral for someone who's a surfing a member of the surfing community, if they've died, we usually go out and pay our respects in that way. But it's also done as this is a show of unity for surfers. So we did that beginning of March in Torquay. And we got over, I was absolutely blown away. I wasn't expecting, we were expecting maybe 500 people and we ended up with about 3,000 people.
Wow, that's huge.
So, and it was just a show that that's exactly, that people have heard, that we've had enough. And it's not just surfers. You know, this is, I've been saying it about these paddle outs, is that this is for anyone who's ever had sand between their toes. You know, anyone who loves the environment, anyone who enjoys sitting and looking at the ocean, this one's for you. And that's the point, is that people are now really starting to wake up. And again, it goes back to that kind of macro perspective of we are sick and tired of watching companies and governments decimate our environment for the sake of a very select few. You know, for the financial benefit of that. So when we see a turnout of 3,000 people in a small town, you know, coastal town in Victoria, that is invigorating. And it drove us. We just thought, wow, okay, we've got something here. So then we decided to go across the whole country and do paddle outs, in every major city in Australia. So we did Melbourne, where we got another couple of thousand, and we went up to Burley, up on the Gold Coast, got another couple of thousand. I'm actually flying over to Perth this weekend. So I'll be there. So we're going Perth and then Newcastle and then Hobart and then Sydney and then Adelaide. So we're putting it out to the crowd and to the masses and saying, like, if you disagree with drilling in the Great Australian Bight, and really, nowadays, it's also going bigger to, if you disagree with our continuation and our feeding of this societal addiction to fossil fuels, then come on down and show your opposition. Because it's a powerful thing to come down and actually witness.
It is. I participated in the St Kilda paddle out. You probably saw me because I was the one in a kayak. Do you remember there was some really strong winds and I kept being blown in amongst everybody in my kayak, and I'm going, sorry about that. I had to extricate myself from this mass of surfers in this kayak. It was really awkward, and I probably wouldn't do that again with the winds. But it was great. It was a great vibe out there on the water. But what do you do for the people that don't want to get wet? How can you include them in the campaign?
Oh, that's fine. Listen, that's like, even still, come on down, absolutely, and bring your signs and show your support in that way. But this is only the paddle outs are only raising awareness and educating people on exactly what is happening. For the next step, what we're asking everyone to do is, first and foremost, is to sign the petition on the Great Australian Bight Alliance website, which is in opposition, obviously, to Equinor drilling. And then there's a lot of different ways that you can do, you know, a lot of different things that you can do. The next one is write to every single MP and minister and anyone of any kind, any representative of yours, and demand what their stance is and ask them to oppose it if that's what you feel they should be doing as your representative. And then the third one that we're doing, where we've actually had two this week that have been successful, is write to your council, to your local council, with a petition. Like, get a petition signed with hundreds of people from your local community, and ask them to oppose it, to pass a motion opposing Equinor drilling in the Bight. And we've already had, we're up to 17 now. We just had Warrnambool that just passed a motion. So there's 12 in South Australia and now four in Victoria, and that number is growing. So if anyone does want to get in contact as well, I have some petitions that I've been giving out to people from, you know, all around the country as well. So that's another big one, because it shows that it's not just a select few individuals who are protesting this. We now have councils on board, so we're trying to hit it from a variety of different kind of aspects. And then the last one, really, and again, this is part of why I'm running in the federal election as well, is this is where people get quite disenfranchised with the voting system, thinking that, you know, it doesn't, one vote doesn't matter. But if everyone gets on board and votes, have a bit of a protest vote, really, and because the way I look at it, a vote for Liberal or Labor is a vote in favour of Equinor drilling. It's also a vote in favour of Adani, and it's also a vote in favour of climate change.
Yeah.
That's my stance.
Absolutely.
All their policies are so severely inadequate to deal with this crisis that if all of a sudden both major parties look and go, oh, there's been a 15% swing towards independents and small parties, then they start to get scared. That's their Achilles heel. They might seem big and powerful, but we are the ones with the power. You know, the people have the power, and that's what we have to realise, is that in when we unite and have our vote like that, they will change. You know, when the people lead, leaders will follow.
It's true. I mean, everybody seems to, they're picking either Liberal or Labor. It's like one or the other, but we've really got to revolt against this whole political system and do something radically different to see change. Yep.
The way I look at it is that we've got 21st century issues right now, and both major parties are trying to deal with it with 20th century solutions.
Well, I don't think
not cutting it.
They're not even trying to deal with it because they're still promoting Adani. I mean, they're behind Adani. So they're not even inadequate. They're actually counter to the... problem.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Absolutely. It's insanity to see what's going on and just to see the disconnect and between the politicians and our communities, those that they were elected to represent. And that's why I stood up. I just got angry and I had enough. And I just went, no, I want to be a community representative. And we need people in power who truly represent our communities.
Now, there's a fantastic Indigenous component to this campaign, the Fight for the Bight, that seems to me at least really connecting people with their environment and their respective communities. And it's a wonderful thing and seems to be really strengthening the campaign. Was that strategic or did that just kind of happen organically?
It's not strategic in terms of that. It's like that was a call that I made very early on. I'll admit, in the Talk E1, it all happened so fast that I didn't have a welcome to country. I did an acknowledgement, didn't have a welcome to country. And then as soon as that happened and I knew that we were going to go across the country, for me it was just, it was non-negotiable. We must have the First Nations culture and community of Australia coming and actually representing themselves and also representing our country as well, because it's such an incredible culture and we have so much to learn from the local Indigenous people of Australia. So for me, it was a connection of our environment to today's society. But it's also just to show that every single time I hear that didgeridoo and I listen to the words of the local elders and things, it brings tears to my eyes because I realise how incredible and how connected they are to this country.
For me, it was
just a non-negotiable, and I continue to do that. And that's exactly every single paddle out. That's the first thing is like, have we got a welcome to country?
It's wonderful. I get teary when I see that happening because it's just beautiful.
You definitely, Kate, saw a very special one in Melbourne with having Uncle Bunnalorri, who's the whale whisperer, and he's incredible. The power that he has he's just got, there's something there. There's just so much depth to his knowledge and to his way of being. So, that one was a real special one.
So tell me, Damien, what's the plan now? I know there's this series of paddle-out rallies all around the Australian coastline. Is there more to the campaign?
Yes, absolutely. It's obviously a huge part of this is the people power, and that's where I come into it, is to rally the troops and to really get everyone around the country to realise what we're putting at risk and that we have the power to stop this. So that's my job. But we've got a lot of people working behind the scenes. It's not just all show and all noise. We've got a lot of people working behind the scenes, looking at our legal kind of stance and looking at how we can actually stop this. If it means if it means going to court or things like that, then so be it. But as I say, it goes back to telling those in power that we've had enough, that enough is enough. This is a line in the sand moment. And we need to stand up and demand a better future we've got to leave a legacy for future generations that we can all be proud of. So that's where we're trying to go with, is going, it's not just Equinor. This is about demanding our government represents us and puts forward a better tomorrow for every single one of us.
Are you prepared to escalate the campaign if need be?
Absolutely. No doubt about it. I never shy away from a challenge. This is what it takes. I'm throwing everything I've got at this. I haven't been able to work in weeks. I'm doing probably 100 plus hour weeks. I'm throwing my credit card, I'm throwing everything at this. But it means the absolute world to me, and I will keep fighting this to the very end until we get every single one of these fossil fuel companies out of the Great Australian Bite. And one of my policies as a federal candidate is to also just stop all new fossil fuel projects and to phase out the current ones and move towards a more sustainable future. All we're asking for, Kate, is clean air, clean water, some shelter, food, and that we can all live in a clean world. You know, it's not that we're not asking much, but we're going to have to fight for it. And I'm so ready for the fight.
So obviously this issue forms a massive part of your platform as an independent candidate as you head towards this federal election. And I'm guessing you probably already have massive local support on the issue. If you're elected, what do you plan to do?
Well, I'll be working with both parties, obviously. As an independent, I'd just be a crossbencher, so it's not like I would form government. But it would be pushing exactly this. It'd be pushing to go to renewable energy by 2030, 100% renewable energy, sorry. It'd be, as I say, to stop all future projects going ahead, and to really start looking after our planet and treating this place like it's our home, because... Well, that's exactly what it is, you know. So we need to... She's been so good to us, this planet, and we need to start treating her with some respect. Anything that I can do would be to be working with both parties and pushing them to ensure that we have adequate policies which reflect the climate crisis that we're in.
Have you identified any allies that exist in Parliament now?
Oh, there's definitely a few that I think would... be quite obvious as to, you know, that we have similar values. Karen Phelps is an absolute hero of mine. I think she's done incredible things with the short time that she's been in power. I still love what a lot of the Greens are doing. There's some decent people in both of the major parties as well. They're just wearing the wrong colours, Kate. So it's about... I don't intend to go in there and pick fights constantly, but I will always stand strong and stand with, all I've got is my integrity when I go in there, and I want to represent my community and I want to represent Australia to ensure that we do move forward in a prosperous way for all, including our environment.
In this day and age of this escalating climate crisis and this biodiversity crisis, the fact that anyone is entertaining the idea of drilling in the Bite, it keeps many of us awake at night. And
myself included.
Yeah, including yourself. What can we do right now when we turn off the radio?
There's a lot you can do. I mean, join some environmental groups. Try and reduce your own footprint. So every little bit helps that all of us do. You know, like, I'm by no means perfect. And again, we're born into a societal addiction to fossil fuels. So everything we do is going to have some kind of impact. But if you can reduce that impact on a personal level, then that's what you can do. And then also, yeah, write to ministers, write to MPs. Like I said, there's those things. It's interesting because people don't see that there's much power in that, but there is. They do listen and they do get scared. If you say that, listen, the fight for the Bite issue is going to dictate my vote, that gets people scared. That gets all of those candidates scared. So that's a huge one as well, is that to get out there and realise that we can all make a difference, every single one of us. I'm just a labourer from Torquay, you know, like that's how I started, like, I've got a degree. I haven't even got a degree yet. I've still got a couple of units left of environmental science. But it's that thing of, like, it's standing up and realising that we need to start looking after each other and our planet. So, yeah, join some groups, some community groups, talk to your neighbours, get a transition streets group going where you look at, like, help each other to be more sustainable within your street or your community. There's plenty of little things to do to ensure that you're trying to reduce your footprint.
I like how you say join an environmental group. You're not spruiking your own, but you say, you know, join a group that resonates with you and just
exactly.
And do something. But how do we join the group that you're involved with the Fight for the Bike? What are the groups that we could look up online?
Okay, so we obviously the Surf Rider Foundation Australia that has been absolutely incredible. They've been fighting for our ocean for a very long time. Then we've also teamed up with the Great Australian Bike Alliance, which is made up of a number of different environmental groups. You've got the Wilderness Society, things like that. So they're all the big groups. But I also think that it's really important to get into your own community and find those small community groups or start your own, you know, like check out Transition Streets. That's a really good one. And that's a great social and environmental group where you just get, literally you might get half a dozen people from your own street, and you just, every week you might have a meeting and you just talk about how you can help each other out. But it might be as simple as, you've got vegetable scraps that you can't compost, I can compost, I'll give you back some stuff for your own flowers, we're helping each other out, you know, things like that. So I'm all for, this is how I started in this political game, funnily enough, is by joining different community groups and volunteering my time for Surf Coast Energy Group, where we raise awareness on sustainability issues around the Surf Coast. So things like that is just, it's a great way to not only meet people, but also do your part to make sure that we move forward in a sustainable way.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're super busy.
And, no problem at all.
Best of luck for the federal elections.
Don't worry, this is not the last you'll hear. I'm just getting started.
Awesome, thank you.
All right, thanks, Kate.
You've been listening to Damien Cole talk about the Fight for the Bite campaign to stop oil drilling in the Great Australian Bight. Now, if you want to go in a paddle out event, there's still a few left to go. There's one at Sandy Bay in Hobart on April the 27th. There's one at Bondi Beach in Sydney on April the 28th. Another at North Wollongong Beach on May the 5th. And Adelaide is having its paddle out on May the 5th also at Brighton Jetty. That's it for Freedom of Species for this week. Remember, you can contact us by email, info@freedomofspecies.org, and you can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. You already probably know that. I've got another song suggestion from Damien. It's Michael Franti with Stay Human. See you next week.
On March 16, the Sentani region of Jayapura in West Papua was hit by massive flooding and landslides, killing at least 89 people, with more than 6,000 people evacuated from their home. 74 people are missing and 159 have been injured. This disaster is the result of torrential rain coupled with deforestation of the mountains, also poor waste management, polluting and clogging waterways, leading to flash flooding and mudslides. At this time, West Papuan people need your help more than ever. Help us. Reach our goal to raise $10,000 to provide emergency supplies, food, first aid, nappies, baby food and milk formula. All money raised will go directly to Yayasan Abdi Budaya Nusantara, a foundation facilitating the evacuation camp in Sentani, West Papua. Donate online at https://chaf.org/project/flood-relief-for-West-Papua. West Papuan people need you. It's time to help and don't make them feel alone.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.